The Koivig Pod on Off the Ball.
And it's true, like, legend of the game, and I think it's one of those that a lot of people don't really realise how much he's achieved, not only in football, but in all overall sporting.
Subscribe to the Koivig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
That music this week is especially for James Skell, who wanted
it. That's what I'm talking about. I just turned it up.
What an entrance.
I reckon 4 to 5 seconds, probably as much as we can get away with without WWE getting this taken down from YouTube and Spotify. So I'm sure that will come under fair use as to why we're using it. The other reason was as well, John S. was in contact in Spotify last week and he said, Will's return needs to be like a WWE wrestler who has arrived at the door next week. If indeed he doesn't see himself as above the non-member common man, he does make his return. So John S., thank you for giving me the idea. And also for a chance to, you know, play that for Skell, because you wanted this a few weeks ago, Skell. You were mad keen for it. You didn't like the intro music we were using.
Yeah, I just felt like it was in, you know, putting me to sleep. You know, when people are going to listen to the podcast, right, we need to build them up with some excitement. And that music, that glass breaking, not me breaking the glass last year, mind you, but that glass breaking through Stone Cold. Yeah, we're ready to rock. We're ready to go. We've got to get through.
Yeah, we could have easily memed that last year too. That's unfortunate we didn't. But anyway, sorry.
I love the image of some lad listening to this now tomorrow morning. They say out in the cow shed somewhere, and suddenly Stone Cold kicks off. He throws on the headphones, go, "Grand, I just trying the podcast here," and like he thinks Stone Cold's about to break into the cow shed or something. Jesus, what
an tip her back. Limerick have put in one of the best performances of all time, and these lads are talking about wrestling music. So it's good to be back with you. I know we dabbled a little bit with a members pod last week, but it's good to be back in the main pod again. Thank you for keeping the ship going the last couple of weeks, Murph.
Me, Jesus.
Well,
right.
You were kind of the de facto host of
Fuck you. Weeks.
That's the point everyone's made. Hey, hold on. There's not a few swearing here.
That's like saying to the wife, "Oh, thanks, wife, for getting pregnant."
No.
I'm here too.
I was going to give you props for a very different reason, which is people were saying, "Oh, Murph has stepped in seamlessly into the hosting role over the last couple of weeks." And it frees up Skell to do what Skell does. He can just throw his opinions out there and Murphy's just setting them up. So you both did a fine job.
Yeah, like when we actually discussed it off air, like particularly the second one, we're like, okay, like I'll tee up a few questions and we'll do a bit of back and forth. And Skell's like, yeah, that's fine. But on air, when it's pointed to him, he goes, "Fuck you." He just says, it's like two different lads, off air and on air. We have an off air agreement here. Jesus. We're starting this hard this week.
Listen, it's for dramatic effect, Murphy. You're reserved now.
Yeah. It's the Stone Cold music. That's what's after happening now.
Yeah, it's got you riled up far too much. Really? Maybe you should have played something softer and easier to start things.
I will say welcome back. And if anyone that's listened to the show, I was lying, right? When I said to you, when you asked me what's wrong with Will, I said he got a terrible hangover.
2 weeks.
He got alcohol poisoning. Did he? I said, yeah, just whatever he was at. So... That wasn't the truth. I was mistelling people that. So just
when you go into your late 30s, a particularly strong weekend on the liquor could result in a 2 week hangover. But thankfully, that wasn't the case. But no, it's good to be back going again. Unusually last week, again, you have to be a member to actually see the video of it. Like, I was literally in bed at that point where I couldn't get out and was chatting to the guys with a microphone from bed last week. And at one point, when the internet dropped at one stage, I returned back to Skell saying, "Jesus, you know what? His. What was it? The pillow covers leave a lot to be desired," I think he said.
Yeah, they're disgraceful, to be honest.
Yeah, there you go.
You need to change.
They are actually changed now at this point as well. That's the good news.
They're the kind of pillow covers that I expect now if I was staying the night at my grandmother's house when I was 9 years of age. They're the ones that I expect in the spare room.
Well, you see, I was back in the parents' house. That's exactly why.
Yeah. Fucking detective here.
Yeah, that dictated. They could well still be the same pillow covers when I left as a teenager many moons ago and came back to it this week. So, but yeah, no, it's great. Lots of people sent messages and DMs and so on. So thanks to everyone who was sound over the last while, more so than anything else. And yeah, had an old brush with surgery last Sunday week, the Sunday of 2 weeks ago. And yeah, I have to say again, staff in the Midland Regional Hospital in Tullamore were absolutely fantastic. Went in to get checked out. They felt that they had to cut something. They did. And now basically just have a bit of recovery until the end of the month. So kind of back at it and back in the hot seat here in the hurling pod, more importantly. And Murph, you were at something very, very different. I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot more in the members pod before people complain that we're not bowing down to Limerick 5 minutes into the podcast. You did High Rocks at the weekend. Did Richie Hogan finish in the top five after his claim he was going to be a top five finisher?
Jesus, he barely finished. Never mind finishing the top five. Yeah, no, Jez, it was a great experience. It was a great crack. Like, I know a lot of people are doing it at the moment, but it was just like a very positive experience. Like, the flight over, just wedged with just lads from Ireland going out doing it, lads and ladies from Ireland going out doing it. I met Desi Moan. He was in my heat for fans of the football pod. And Desi Moan was in the heat. Absolute animal of a man. I saw that he was going to be there, so we're chatting away. We're chatting game plans before it, but no, he's a bit more experienced in that area. Actually, randomly, we're speaking of wrestling music. So, like, one of the things lads will be telling you at the start of the race, like, just don't go out early. Like, don't go hard too early. It's a long race, like, you know, so don't go hard too early. But nobody warns you that. So you're let off in heats. So from 9 o'clock in the morning, every 10 minutes, there's, I don't know, 30, 40 lads left off and out you go. So just, let's say I was 12:20 and you walk into the Oak and Desi Moan, myself and Hebe lads there, French lads, German lads, everything. And about a minute out, 2 minutes out, AC/DC Hell's Bells starts playing. Like, the gong knows AC/DC. Who doesn't know it? Starts playing. The gong starts playing. So straight away, you're kind of going, all right, here, come on, I'll give this a rattle. And then there's all this motivational speaking and different things. Builds you up. And then, bang, you start. It counts down from 10. Bang, you start. And John Cena's entrance music plays. It's literally lads just, like, out the door, gone, sprinting. And it was just, it's so funny that, like, you're there going, yeah, listen, I'm here to enjoy myself. I'm just going to get through it. Two songs, AC/DC, Hell's Bells, and then John Cena. And, yeah, plan goes out the window. Off you go.
And Murph, I bet you got to the ski machine and said, fuck, I went way too fast in that first lap.
I got there and I was going, yeah, I'm going fairly hard here. But one of the things, and I know we said we'd chat about in the members' pod for a bit of crack, but one of the things, I approached it very agriculturally. I'll put it that way, Scahill. So, like, there was a lot of lads very streamlined going around the place in their Under Armour gear and different things. Who were like, obviously, you've done this quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, like, I was going out there running around big hurling legs at me. Like, I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't like these gazelles that were running around. So for all these, like, really tough events, like 3,500 or 3,000 lads ran it, but they give you back, like, your time. So, like, let's say for the ski org, you came 800th or you came 1,700th out of everybody.
You actually came 859th in the ski.
In the ski. But look at the sled push, 43rd all day. So, like, sled push 43rd. Now look at the sandbags, 1,700.
The wall ball, 1,791.
Oh, I died. So I was like, I looked at it afterwards. Like, half of it is a learning
Let's
experience.
Let's just find out where Richie Hogan came. So
I was just thinking, where is Richie now after all of his big talking off the ball on Thursday night?
Richie came 1,572 second
overall.
Yeah, in the men's category. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good fifth.
There was a few impressive lads out there. I met one fella, Jim Bailey. You won't know this fella, but just met him in the airport. He was in the 60 to 64-year-old category.
Oh my God.
And we're chatting away, and he did 122. He did a time, because I did 126. This lad is 62, did 120 or 60-something, did 122. But chatting away to him, and he was like, I was like, oh, you're doing the High Rocks. Yeah. I mean, I said, it's my sixth or eighth or something, and he's going to the Worlds in Chicago in a few weeks. And he was like, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm in the army. And he goes, oh, very good. I rode with two lads from the Air Corps before. I used to do a bit of rowing. I was like, all right, yeah. Where did you row? He said, last year there, we rowed from the Canary Islands to America. And I went, sorry? And he goes, yeah, just a race there. And I was like, how long did that take you? And he goes, about 5 weeks, I suppose. And I went, what? And I was like, it was just, like, there was just people out there. They were just very impressive, like, you know. And but it was cool. No, it was good. Good crack. And I appreciate there's also people going, I'm sick of listening to people doing High Rocks. So I also get that.
That's fucking. I would say, Murphy, it's enjoyable. First 1K was fast.
I'll put it this way, right? This is just to throw the numbers out there. The lad, Mickey Comfort, who was doing it with us, our strength and conditioning coach, he said, listen, 4:15 is what you're aiming for the first kilometre. After AC/DC Hell Spells and John Cena's music, I did 3:30. I was John Cena. That's what I just thought I was. I was just sprinting. You can't weigh off it. But good crack.
And just before we move off this, can you answer the claim that I saw on X/Twitter last night that apparently you and Richie leaving cost Dainsford a couple of points in the league during the weekend?
We're not playing the league at the moment. And Richie isn't playing this year.
Oh,
so
man, you're grand. Yeah, no fault.
That was on X, was it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Saw that being claimed.
No, so we're playing basically I think it's called the Burn Cup. It's kind of intermediate senior league where while the intercounty is on, like, we literally just have the complete split season, so we won't start the league until August. So but Richie isn't playing this year, so he was It wasn't two of us anyway. It was just me away this weekend, there technically.
No fault applied, so to the lads. Right, let's get into it, because what a weekend we just had. Limerick still going for 7 in a row in Munster. Foot and a half in the Munster hurling final. We'll go through all the permutations a little bit. We'll go through the venues for the potential matchups as well. Awesome display. See what the lads think. Probably as good as the 2021 final. 16 points. They won the end against Cork. They scored, I know Skell loves the stats on this, 218 in the first half, 213 from play from 25 shots. That's insane in the first half. Limerick's win then, of course, ended Clare's reign as All-Ireland champions as well. So they needed wins from Cork and from Tipperary. They got half it. They didn't get the second half. So Clare's reign is now over. Cork, if they don't want to follow the banner in making an early exit, will have to win their game against Waterford. Winner takes all clash on Lee side this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock. Tips young blood very much to the fore. Some of their under 20 players, busy men in the week just gone by, but partying like 2019 at Semple Stadium. The reason why? First home championship win in Munster since 2019. First win against Waterford since 2019. The first time they've gone with back-to-back wins in Munster since 2019. And that win has sent Liam Cahill's team into the knockout stages. They're going to finish somewhere in the top three in Munster by the end of it. Kilkenny nearly let a mammoth lead slip in their game against Dublin, but Billy Ryan's goals sealing a win against Dublin in the end. So they're back into another Leinster final. We know that Dublin and Galway are both going to advance. So that win for Kilkenny makes their game against Wexford a dead rubber this coming Sunday. But their game at Parnell Park, Dublin and Galway, is a de facto Leinster semi-final. And then at the bottom, Antrim off the back of a 28-point defeat away from home against Galway, Offaly losing by a goal on the road against Wexford. It means a much better scoring difference for Offaly going into that game in Tullamore on Sunday. So Antrim need to win if they're not going to go into the Joe McDonagh Cup. And just on the McDonagh Cup, we'll touch on it a bit later on as well. Remarkable weekend for Kildare. Really an incredible last 3 weeks for them, where they've beaten Westmeath, Carlow and Laois with two of those games away from home. Their win against Laois was the first time they've beaten them since 1978 in any competition, and first time they've beaten Laois in championship. And because Carlow and Laois meet this Saturday in the last round, if Kildare get the business done against Down, they're going to a first ever Joe McDonagh Cup final off the back of coming out of the Christie Ring, which is a remarkable achievement. But still, it's going to be the fight for the final very much going down to the last day. Down looking for points at the bottom of the table. Kerry can't afford to lose against Westmeath or they'll go down to the Christie Ring. So a lot on the line this Saturday afternoon as well. I guess, lads, the place to start has to be Limerick Cork, though, because we were building this upscale, as you know, potential first of a trilogy. Everyone was talking about how well Cork were going, particularly the scoring their forwards were doing. Coming off the back of winning the league, they were going to go up to the Gaelic grounds and give this a right go. We all thought this was going to be a one-score game or within a couple of points. I think we all had different predictions. We went across all three on the members' pod last week. Yeah. But instead, Limerick came out and absolutely blitzed them in that first half.
They did. And like, for everyone watching, see, for people who are there and people watching television, when we talk about blitz, you'll see scores and you'll see, you know, great execution and skill. But what I just see is positions 8 through 12. And I've written down here, like, for any team that wants to see how to prepare against opposition, just look at the way those lads, those five lads operated. You know, every team is trying to sit deep against Limerick, right? But Limerick are they're the trendsetters. They'll sit deep and then they'll depend on O'Donoghue, Lynch, Hegarty, Morrissey, these lads, to break up everything around the middle. And by God, did they do it. Like, how many possessions did you see Keane Lynch get in his own half? You know, in his own, not in the opposition half now, mind you, in his own half. I think actually the possession he got for the first goal was inside probably 50 yards. Mm. That's where he picked it up. So he's providing a platform. They are providing a platform, to allow the Limerick defence to be airtight. And that's what chokes opposition so badly, because there's no space to operate. And like all the relevant stats that you'll talk about that I would always reference, like the shots from play is a big, it's a big reference point to see how a team is doing. The count is 31-17, almost double. Cork just had no time to breathe. And you'll say to yourself, God, there's lads everywhere. There's green jerseys everywhere. It's just, but it's five or six players. And even the guys who come in into those positions, they slot in seamlessly and they add to the Limerick energy. And it's relentless. And then when you couple that with how good they are dealing with high ball on the full back line, and also how good they are dealing with, like, Aaron Gillan being the lone full forward at times. Like, he can sit in the edge of the square like he won the penalty and scored himself. And, you know, take on Owen Downey, who's probably, what, 6'5", 6'6"? You know, and still challenge. So when I look at the way the Limerick performed, yes, there was glorious scores and there was great brands of play, etc., and great runs being made. But it came down to fundamentally how Limerick broke up the Cork, you know, defence, attack, through sheer and utter honest endeavour and work rate. Like, everything they did yesterday was at 100 miles an hour, and there was real grit, you know, and I'd say they were tuned iron to that Cork, really and truly. Because, look, come here, I was on the Cork train as well. I actually called it a draw. And I think, obviously, the Cork and Páirc Uíomh are a different animal compared to going elsewhere, for obvious reasons. But I thought Cork would put up to Limerick, and they, Limerick just shut them down. And like, I to use this term, I don't think he was in the senior county, but they did. Like, Limerick bullied Cork. Like, they did, like. You know, it was like a senior team versus a 20 team. And it, this wasn't a particular, you know, situation whereby, you know, Cork won 5 positions, Limerick won 7. Limerick won 15 positions, straight up. They won 15 positions. They won the puck-out battle. They won the shot battle. They won the turnover battle, which is a big one. They won the free count, and they won the distance covered. That's huge. Do you know what I mean? In terms of possessions. Like, so they won every notable stat you could say in the game. And again, it epitomised, I'll say for a finish when I talk about Limerick, it epitomised when they were going for goals at the end, Cork, and Kyle Hayes jumped in front of someone. I forget who it was. It could be Brian Hayes, Darius Fitzgibbon. But they may have been, what, fuck it, 5-15 points up, and he jumps right in front of him to stop the shot. Like, and that's to me now is better than any words any person could ever say, you know, because that he's just showing complete action. It's just like a follow me attitude, which is the way he probably epitomised that kind of attitude all day at number 6. But I just have to reemphasise, like, you know, I said, I've wrote it here, a lesson to all young players on how to work. Don't talk about it, just do it. You know what I mean? And they did, and they just broke up everything. It was an awesome, awesome display. And like, when you say Limerick are gone away, they never went anywhere. So they might have a little lull in the performance at the time, but they didn't go anywhere. Like, and they looked like they're as fresh and as hungry as they were 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that John Kiely said after the game. I was just noting what he said on the radio afterwards. He said, the thing that really pleased me was the appetite and enthusiasm we saw from the players. He said, we've made a lot of progress. There are other guys now on the panel that need to take their opportunities as well, which is maybe half point into what they might do against Clare this weekend. And he said, they need to keep the pressure on the lads in their places at this stage. So that's the way they're looking at this. And like, the thing is, Murph, when it came to Limerick, we talked about the way that they had used the league. And John Kiely had been quite honest that they had maybe come into the year a little bit more slowly than they had in previous years. He talked about the lack of preseason competition, that maybe they were hitting the ground a bit slower. They were looking at lads. And we were talking so many times about just adding a bit to the panel, adding lads who could come in to start. Now they're in a position going into this Clare game, because they ain't going to get beaten by 24 points by a Clare team who are not going to qualify. Where if this means they want to bring O'Donovan in, if they want to bring Hannan in for a run, if they want to start Colin Coughlin, all those all-stars that were on the bench at the weekend just gone by, if they want to get game time into them, they've now bought themselves the chance to do that. While at the same time, Adam English is now a central player to the team. O'Neill come on at the weekend. The Bull has been getting more and more time. Flanagan comes into the team. Like, he has ridiculous options coming into this weekend, and he can just keep it purring over against Clare.
Yeah, he can. Like, it's a completely different place Limerick are now coming to the rest of the championship. Like, something, I think, in a very fair and balanced view of Limerick over the last while, which we've kind of said, is just we haven't seen that, not even say the killer instinct, but that fluidity to their game. It's just that Limerick that we knew over the last few years just kind of wasn't showing. We knew it was there. We knew it was just sitting there waiting to explode. But at times they show flickers of it. Against Waterford, we were going, okay, hang on, this is a massive improvement compared to what we saw previously. And we just saw these touches of brilliance coming back into them. But what we saw against Cork was completely unprecedented, even by their own standards, at how quickly they managed to get back to that level. Like, I read John Kiely's article, it was John Fogarty's article interviewing John Kiely there in The Examiner. And I was just looking at a few of the words that Kiely was using. Like, for me, there was a huge amount of psychology went into the last while. Because the reason I say that, yes, there was heaps of skill on display and tactics were brilliant. But the clarity of thought in the Limerick players was just incredible. Like, you look at Keane Lynch's touch to set up Adam English, where he's about to strike it, catches Adam English, recognizes about half a second here now, take it back to the hurl and flick it onto him. You don't do that if you're not thinking clearly. Like, you don't do that if you're not full of confidence. You look at Gillan, whatever with the goal, like the whole way Gillan approached that goal, that touch where he cruised out to the end line, picked it up a couple of inches before the end line. It wasn't even a yard, like a couple of inches. Had just complete belief in the touch that I was going to get it up. Brings it out to the 14 end to have a look. And then it wasn't even a sidestep. It was almost like an NFL swing twist back around to put the Cork defender, you know, sitting on her arse, basically. Like, that sort of stuff, that playfulness, I'd nearly call it, that I hadn't seen in a while in Limerick, was just there. And then, like, I think Skehill said it there, like, the hard work and the aggression. Like, Kyle Hayes' flick that set up that Adam English goal, I think it was, where he flicked it. He came running in. He was further from that than the Cork lad, but he didn't hesitate for a second. He sprinted as hard as he could and got in a savage tackle. I think a Nicky Quaid stop against Patrick Horgan. Like, if you look at that, Nicky Quaid didn't even stop it. He lashed at it. Like, as in, that ball was coming and his hurl goes forward to it. Like, there was such confidence in it. And just everything they did, yes, it's there was brilliance all around the field and there was genius. But for me, the one thing that struck me was just the confidence that was within the group, how clearly they were thinking. And they weren't hesitating at all, you know, when pulling the trigger. We saw Tom Morrissey getting back to his best, you know, in terms of, I think it was the first score he got there, intercepting a puck out, getting it, having a look and going, yeah, I'll put this over the bar. There's just so many parts there that I went, okay, it's not just one or two things Limerick have gotten right here today. It was off the charts, the amount of areas that they have upped their game over the last few weeks. And a few of the points that, just to pull out of John Fogarty's article, like even the way Kylie was speaking, like he was just saying that they'd put in work over the last 6 to 10 weeks, and he spoke about the Kilkenny game being cancelled. But he was just saying like that, he mentioned words such as the boys are really enjoying it, they're a joy to behold, and it's fantastic. And the positivity around what he was saying, like that spoke to me in a way that over the last few weeks, they have really reset in terms of their objectives for the year. And I think that was evident. Like the skill between this time last year and last weekend, that didn't leave the camp. It was there somewhere. And I think for them, it was a kind of a case of how do we get these lads to a stage where they explode out into the field, that we can, I suppose, throw the shackles off and we can really go with this Cork team. How they did that in the last few weeks, I just think is really remarkable. And it was, look, I have to say, it was just a joy to watch. It was so enjoyable to watch the amount of skill that was on display. It was just, it was breathtaking, really.
So Kyle Hayes gets man of the match. I think probably Lynch could have done so as well. He set up 2-4 in the first half alone with the way he was playing. I know Podge Collins was saying after the game to Tommy Rooney that he said he's almost like Maradona wrapped up with Messi at the same time with the things that he can do and just the skill level that you will see from Lynch to keep the ball just popping around within that Limerick team. But just want to ask you, Scale, about Hayes, because we wondered about him at 6. Last year, Cork tried to shackle him and they were able to do so a bit at 7. At 6, it looks like his instincts are now really coming to the fore after getting a few games playing there. Because at times when he was stepping out, Will O'Donoghue could step back in. And then Hayes kind of seamlessly went back in. As you say, he showed great hunger for the defensive side of the game. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to go in at 6. You know, John Conlon's talked about adapting into that role. You can be a guy who's got plenty of hurling in you, but still it takes time to adapt. This felt like it was the real, all right, Hayes is the next Limerick 6 now.
Well, he certainly is. I think like the way he's performing of late is tremendous. And like, if you watch any kind of defender, Will, right, when a defender runs forward with the ball, right, they'll run at top speed. Okay, no problem, easily, because there's a chance to get an attack here or a score on. Watch them when they're running back. Excellent defenders recover at 100 miles an hour. I mean, 100 miles an hour. And that's their primary job, is to get back and mind the house as fast as they can. When I see some defenders and I'm watching them and they're great going forward, next thing they turn around towards their own goal when there's an overlap or attack, and they're kind of faking it. You know what I mean? They're going at 70%, but they're looking like they're going at 100, but they're not, right? When Hayes is going back, he is going all out 100 miles to get back. So his recovery speed is fantastic. So that means he cares as much about defending as he does going forward. I was guilty of looking at him in the seventh position going forward the whole time, always going forward, and what he gives to Limerick from an attacking perspective and how the management he takes or requires from opposition to kind of nullify him in an attacking sense. That's his number 7. But I never gave him enough credit for defending. You know, I never did, because I thought, you know, he's a good defender. But when I watched him at 6 on Sunday, I said, geez, like he has some less recovery. The one where he, I don't know who it was, but they got through in the middle and he got down then and caught it with his hand really low and turned around and came out and won the free in the first half. That was just awesome. Like that, he was taking slaps left, right and centre all day, because they were trying to get at him, Cork, in fairness. Whether they're trying to get a rise out of him or whatever, they're trying to get at him. And he just stayed neutral throughout the whole thing. He was awesome. Like he is their 6. Like, and you know, it's an embarrassment of riches if Declan Henning is up to form and gets back in there again and he gets to shove on. But there's no misstep there. Like Limerick have always had 7 good defenders. Seven top class defenders for 6 spots. So now they're Darren Morrissey back at 3. If Hannon gets fit, you're back to the dilemma again. But like you're talking about man in the match, Hayes was class, Lynch was class, Tan Morrissey was awesome. You never see him do anything, let's say, truly, you know, headline taking or anything that you'll see in a highlight reel. But like he shackles the likes of Brian Hayes and Harwin when they came in tough him. There wasn't an inch given. And like we know, one of the primary forwards in Cork's attack is Brian Hayes for the goal getting perspective, because their movement is so good. But like Morrissey was class. So their defence is rock solid. If there's questions marks about them, and when I say question marks, I mean minor question marks. They're positional question marks. You know, not actual defensive question marks.
They're answered. They're answered completely. And now they're a frightening force again. And they've built, it's kind of funny, you know, over the last few weeks or number, or even the last maybe 12 or 14 months, you'd say, you'd be asking yourself, is a bit of the Limerick aura gone? You know, is it slightly gone, I'm saying? You know, but it's not. It's right back where it started. So it's like you pressed the pause button after the 2023 All-Ireland, and here we are back again. back again. It's just, that's the same kind of feel of somewhat invincibility. I know we can talk about Limerick getting beaten. Jesus, I cannot see them getting beaten going forward. Yeah. The way, because we talked about them, and just as an asterisk beside our discussions, right? When we spoke about All-Ireland contenders, we were saying Cork were right up there, but we always had an asterisk beside Limerick, always, because we said, the three of us, we said, what they can do on their day is completely awesome. They blow everyone out of the water with the way they squeeze the life out of teams and then attack them. And this is the exact performance or exact team performance that we're talking about. Exactly. So when we talk about, Clare, Chip, Cork, great, but these lads in green, when they throw on this kind of performance or form, no one's beat them. And I think everyone across the country would agree with that. Nobody's beat them in this form. No one.
Yeah. It's that scary level to get to. So again, it's 29 scores, 326 this time round, kind of 30 points is where you set it up when they're absolute pomp. Like, I think that first half particularly is as good as the second half of the Munster final when they blew Tipperary away. It's as good as that All-Ireland final performance against Cork. It's as good as they played against Waterford in that All-Ireland final where they were ridiculously dominant as well. Yeah. It's as good probably as the second half against Kilkenny. Remember when they were brilliant in that All-Ireland final as well? Like, I don't know, Murph. I mean, to me, that is Limerick as good as we've seen them over the last 8 years, that first half.
It is, yeah. Like, one of the things I was thinking about was, we'll speak about Tipperary and Waterford in a while, but to compare Tipperary and Limerick from their performances at the weekend, someone described it as like a page-turning moment for Tipperary in that they showed us, like you mentioned the stats at the start, they showed us something that we needed to see to know that, yes, they have emerged from a little bit of a quiet period over the last few years, as maybe people would want to call it, that they've emerged out of that. And we needed to see that by maybe a few performances or a particular performance, etc. And what we've seen over Tipperary the last while, we can now say, yeah, this team has taken a step forward. We're not saying that, okay, they're pole position or anything. We're just saying they're taking a step forward. What we needed to see was something like that from Limerick to go, yeah, we know exactly what they're capable of. They just haven't shown since the All-Ireland semi-final last year that, you know, they're going to get back to that stage. The skill is there, the players are there, etc., etc. But they hadn't shown us a performance. And that was a page-turning performance where you went, ah, okay, forget anything you've been doing previously in terms of who's the favourite for the All-Ireland, who's this, who's that, power rankings. It's all now Limerick after that performance because they brought it back to that centre. And you're exactly right, Will. Like, as in, it was such an impressive performance that it is in the same ballpark as all those other 35-minute performances that you just mentioned there. That was just a step above what any other team in the country could produce. So, yeah, it was remarkable. I don't think anybody was really expecting that. Like, I certainly wasn't that weekend because I don't think any other team could turn around a performance like that considering how the round robin has been. Like, you know, their last few performances have not been of that caliber. They've been good and we've seen great patches and we can see very good play. But that was just an elite performance. So it's absolutely, like, even whatever this team does over the next few years, like, again, it's added now to that list of incredible Limerick performances at different stages, etc. So it's just, a huge, huge performance.
Kind of a few notes on Cork here, because we've talked so much about how impressive their attack has been. And I'm sure there's a certain element of they were a little bit off, but also Limerick stopped them from being able to operate. So 116 is their lowest championship scoreline they've put up in 9 years. Also, you look at, like, first half, 5 points in play across the team. You look at that inside forward line. When the game finished up, the inside forward line had 2 points in play. Like, that full forward line that we've talked about that have been destroying everybody. Hayes has been banging in goals. Connolly's a goal machine as well. Like, Horgan scores 110, but 1-9 if it comes from frees. Just one of the things, Skell. I don't know whether... Is that down to Cork misfiring to a certain extent, or does all the credit go to the way that Limerick shut off the supply to them?
It's kind of both, really. This is a hard one to explain. I think if coaches and managers across the country had the answer to this one, you know, you'd be near like a guru, to be honest. Because there's days where teams, you know, they perform beyond expectation, and days teams perform below expectation. And I think it was a mix of both. Like, I didn't expect Limerick to play as well, or at this stage of the championship, as they did yesterday. Nor did I expect Cork to drop the performance levels, you know, to a level that we've seen, you haven't seen from them in quite a while. So when I look at Limerick, right, the reason I have to say this is because I touched on Limerick first before I get to Cork. Limerick are on the same page, all collectively. 15 knew exactly what they were doing. The forwards were offering opportunities to the goalkeeper. The defence were airtight because they knew the forwards would cover for them. And then when the ball went into the full forward line, they knew that the likes of Galan and Reedy and Shane O'Brien would hold it up, retain it, wait for the cavalry to come. It was fantastic, right? From Cork's perspective, when I watched Patrick Collins from the puck out, I felt sorry for him because it felt like to me the Cork offering was not there in the forwards. It just wasn't there. They didn't have the same fluidity in terms of movement. Collins couldn't get the same puck outs off into space or into isolated runners that the likes of Nicky Quaid had. That was a huge platform for where they struggled in the first half. And if you watch the first 20 minutes, the Cork puck out gets exploded. It gets absolutely hammered. I mean, hammered, right? To a point whereby it actually becomes an area of strength for Limerick. So we talked about before about how Limerick love to shoot because they're good on opposition puck out. This is a key issue here right now. Collins couldn't get anything going. When he went short, especially out to his left, he loves to go to his left. If you watch Limerick, they kept overloading the left. So they pushed him to his right. So when he went short on his right, he would invariably, because he's not great on his right side, had to turn and go to his left across the way. And Limerick had it completely shut off. So I thought Limerick had all the homework done on the long Cork puck out, in which they had an awful lot of issues with last year. On the short puck out down to the wing, which we've noticed in, I suppose, a pattern throughout the course of the year, we were saying a lot of the Cork goals were coming from that left wing as you look out, you know, kind of the 12-15 side. That was shut off completely. And then with regard to the overall, let's say, sometimes you see movement in the middle with Fitzgibbon, Ethan Toomey, Tim O'Mahony, picking up puck outs in the mid-range as an isolated runner. Didn't happen at all, Will. So a lot of things that Cork would have planned and would have based their game off, let's say, got completely closed out. So it just showed to me that the homework was done by Limerick and they executed perfectly. And then when you're big game pillars, when your pillars of game, let's say, your puck out or your forward movement, say, when they don't key off you, like you're dead. You're just dead in the water because you haven't got time for plan B. But the beauty of this is they can take the loss, they can assess it, and they can go again. You know, this would have been a travesty if there was a situation where it was knockout base and they played like this, haven't played the way they played up to the championship so far, and they got knocked out. But they have time to recoup, assess what went wrong, try put a plan in to fix it, and then move on again. Because from my perspective, I reckon they're guaranteed two more games. You know, if things pan out the way I think they're going to pan out, I reckon they'll be the most defined with Limerick. But time will tell. But so they're guaranteed two more games. So they've got time to rectify what went wrong. But that doesn't excuse, you know, for me, everything I spoke there was technical and tactical, right? But then you've got the physical and mental side of it, right? So then from Limerick's physical perspective was a very dominating kind of, you know, persona. It was very free, dominating, very alpha male, you know, very flipping, you know, I'm the big boy, David, you're a small boy. Cork was quite introverted. There was no real aggression. And the intensity, like I have written here, volume and intensity is key to preparation. And like Limerick came to for the fight. They were the aggressors. And unfortunately, Cork were the receivers. And when you're, you know, every team gets momentum in a game. They get purple patches. And sometimes you can wear them out and you can just get through them and get your own purple patch. There was no proper patch for Cork. I reckon when Horgan got the goal, there was maybe, 3 minutes of proper patch? That was it, lad. So this was an utter domination factor. And sometimes, maybe Murph, I don't know, would you agree with this from being from Kilkenny, but sometimes when you show up for these kind of games and you're ready to go and you realise the team opposite you is just in a different level of aggression, you know, and it's very, very hard to live with, right? And then you can't live with it. And next thing, it's like, there's no way back. Like, you're just taking on water on the boat. There's no way getting it out. It just felt like a suffocating performance for Cork yesterday. And it was a case of just wear out the clock. Just move on. Move on to the next day. You're consigned to your fate, right? But move on. And look, we've talked about counties before, lads, about how they have great comebacks. You know, Dublin yesterday had a great comeback. Couldn't get the job done. Clare against Cork as well. Now, are they connected? Is Cork going forward so much getting reeled back? Are they connected? That's for further down the line. But I just didn't see it in Cork. You know, that fight of return, you know, to get back when you were, what, was it? Was it 15, 16 points down at halftime? I can't even remember.
15 down, you know, at halftime, yeah.
That's a colossal thing to do. And the psychology involved in that when you're facing Limerick is not simple to do either. It's not simple. I think if you're in the county, fair enough, you've got a shot. But when it's Limerick at home, and that them supporters are baying for blood, especially with the perceived arrogance of the Cork public. I heard a Limerick lad say that recently. He works with me. Like, he said the Cork crowd were arrogant. Like he was trying to put them down, you know. And I can see where he's coming from, like, because Cork are five All-Irelands. Or sorry, Limerick are five All-Irelands. Cork don't. Yet all the talk nationally is about them, me included. So,
oh, I know. Like, is this the funny part? Was loads of Limerick supporters are pointing this out. They were like, the 2025 All Ireland champions Cork have just been beaten by Limerick. There was this kind of perception that they were almost anointed. Like, one bookmaker had already paid out in Cork, lifting the Liam McCarthy at this point as well. So Limerick, as Michael Jordan would say, took that personally and used it. And even, like, I think as well, Murph, John Kiley, a couple of weeks ago after the Waterford game, was doing the rallying call. He was like, you know, you've got your tickets now for the game. Gaelic grounds for this game when we come back out against Cork. I want the Limerick fans to come. I want them to be intense. And like, there was a noise for those first 3 minutes. Like, as you say, when Aaron Gillan is leaving O'Leary on his backside and turning for goal, like, it's almost a party atmosphere within the Gaelic grounds at that point. The Limerick fans brought it as well.
They did, yeah. They really just thrived in that environment. Like, was it 42,000 were at the game? 43,000? Yeah. It was an incredible turnout. And they really embraced that rivalry. And, like, it is a fantastic rivalry to have. And, like, even the fact that there is that seesaw of Limerick were in the hot seat for quite a while against Cork. Cork turned them over twice last year. Perceived now, not to say changing the power by any means, but if people were tipping people to be ahead a small bit, it would have been Cork by form over the last while. I mean, they're league champions. You know, they've had really good performances over the last while. And there's a responsibility that comes with that. And there's kind of a... You have to deal with the fact that now all the talk is about you. Like, we spoke about it a few weeks ago, where the Cork fans are trying to play it down as hard as they possibly could, that they are now favourites. But part of being favourites is the responsibility to take ownership of that and go, okay, well, how does this affect us and how do we manage this favouritism? Now, the thing is about it as well, and it's kind of going back to what Skehill is saying there, I fully agree with you, Skehill. Like the performance I was looking at, like, before doing the pod, I was thinking, what has this been like for me before? Like, have I been part of that? And it's when Ye Betters in 2012. It's the exact same thing. Yeah, Ye arrived with this incredible attitude where we were not expecting it. And it was only afterwards, you don't know you're not expecting it until it's too late. And you're on the field and there's petrol being poured on the fire. It's too late to stop it then. It's just far too late. It's the old thing. I don't know how many times we've mentioned it on the pod, of Tommy used to say to us that you can't win the match before Sunday, but you can lose it, in terms of you approach it in the wrong way. That very much seemed to be maybe the case with Cork. Go on, yeah.
Can I ask you a question? So when everyone has hindsight after the fact, right? But when you're there in real time, and I've been there myself, okay, you need to, like, there's no way around it, is there? You can't stop the clock. You can't call a timeout. You can't call draw a halftime within the halftime. Do you get me?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's actually like quicksand. You cannot get out of it.
You can't.
If you're not prepared for survival or the battle, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So even if you got, let's say, 6 seconds more for that team in 2012.
No, not
going to happen. You're not there.
You're being beaten in too many areas on the field that it's not even a case where someone comes over and go, oh, someone mark Canning there, someone mark Aaron Gillan. So, it doesn't work like that. It's very much that one of those defeats, it happens because you're being beaten in about five areas, and the main one is being beaten in work rate. Like, that's simply it. Like, ye were very aggressive that day. You worked really hard. Look at Limerick against Cork. Limerick were very aggressive. They worked really hard, and Cork didn't. We didn't work hard that day. And, like, the thing is for Cork now, because I was going, well, where do Cork go for here? There is this thing of, okay, well, what's next now for Cork? And the simple thing is that there's a little bit of tough love. That's what we did anyway. There was very much tough love, because when a problem is work rate,
yeah,
that can only be dealt with, lads, you have to harden up here now. I nearly said harden the F up, but, like, you need to harden up here, because it's a case that work rate is only comes down to pure aggression, accepting that you have to, regardless what's going on in the game, you have to be absolutely dogged and working hard. We, after that game, and again, I'm saying this because Cork are in the same position, we watched the full match the following night as a group after Ye Betters, and it was horrendous to look at, because everywhere, all over the field, we were beaten.
Fires.
Yeah, everywhere. Like, no matter where the ball was poked, Cork will look at this game and they'll do the exact same thing. But the biggest thing to do is, and I'll harp back to the likes of, we spoke about, was it Davy with Waterford, when Waterford were beaten hard. Sorry, it was after Liam Cal finished with Waterford and Davy took over. Clare had beaten Waterford, and Waterford kind of had that capitulation at the end of the season.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at the pods when we were speaking about it back then, we were saying that Davey said in the paper that, oh, we're just moving on. We're getting on with it. We're moving on. And I was like, Jesus, you have to rip the Band-Aid off that. You have to look at that for what it was and say, lads, what happened here? Because otherwise it sits in the background and festers. So Cork now will be going, why did that happen? Like, this is not a catastrophe, but why did it happen? And we're now going to face a Waterford team that are going to throw the kitchen sink at us, because next Sunday, any circumstance where Waterford win, they're true. So Waterford just have to go and go ball-headed at Cork. And if that fragility is still there with Cork, where they go, what's happening again? Because they haven't addressed it. Potential is there for Waterford to go and topple them, because that seed of doubt is still in them. So now it's a case of, you're not going to learn any more about hurling over the next few days. You're just a simple case of going, why did that happen? Lads, we're better than that. And maybe just a bit of tough love straight up the middle. Lads, we can work 10 times harder than that. We were bullied. Did we buy into the hype a small bit? And like, these are just honest things you have to ask yourself, that when you're winning, you automatically become weaker. Why did we become weaker? Did we believe the hype? Did we honestly think we could go down to the Gaelic grounds and push over Limerick? We maybe weren't expecting Limerick. Well, they're like, are expecting that performance from Limerick. Well, then also you have to apply that to Waterford and say, well, maybe Waterford are going to come at something that we weren't expecting. You know, you can look at Waterford against Tip and say they hit X amount of wides, they weren't shooting this. But for one game, if Waterford turn up, then Cork have the same problem on their hands. So this is where Cork are going. However, if Cork go and put in a really good performance this weekend, they walk out on Sunday evening and go, lads, we're getting ready for a Munster final. I'm fairly sure there's no permutation in which once Cork win, they're second and they're Munster final, correct?
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
So like, it's very, it now actually in some ways becomes very simple for Pat Ryan. And I admire what Pat Ryan said after the game. Like, I mean, again, he spoke really well. He just said, look, we were outworked. Limerick were better in all departments. He didn't put any excuses out on the table. And for me, that says that there's a manager going back to the players saying, lads, we have little to no injuries in this team. We've a fantastic group of players. It all came down to work rate and just being outfought. Like, worst case scenario, Limerick are better than us. They beat us by 4 or 5 points and we go home with their tail between our legs. It's worse when you just don't work. So I think between now and Sunday, that's where Pat Ryan will be going and say, lads, we can turn all this around and we're still back in the Munster final come Sunday evening. That's where we want to be. And going back to the Gaelic grounds, if that scenario plays out. So it's not like a catastrophe now for Cork, but urgent kind of...
But it's a decision, Murph. I would always say, if I'm coaching a team, right, that these things happen. So I'd say, is work rate a decision or a skill? It's a decision. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah.
Am I going to do it or I'm not, right? So in these games, when these type of games materialize, it's usually in the first 7-12 minutes. Within that time range, you'll know if we're up or if we're not. And if you're hard to beat in those first 12 minutes, like you defend while you're at the pitch of the battle, you'll be fine for the 58. I guarantee you will. But if you're off for the first 12, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Because you haven't got time to recuperate. And I'll see it in every happened just last week in the 20s. Our lads weren't up for it. They just weren't up for it.
Yeah.
Whatever, for reasons I can never understand. And then trouble is, knockout hurling. And if you're not up for the first 10 minutes, you're fucked. That's it, because you are fighting fires in for the rest of the day.
Yeah, so and sometimes it isn't even like you can't even put your finger on it. Like, I'm saying from the point of view that you can't see it coming. And I would say that about Cork the weekend. Like, they can walk away from that. It's not making an excuse, but I've been part of them losses. I'd say, Skell, you've been part of them losses. You can do the post-mortem afterwards 100%.
I've been part of a lot more of them losses than you have.
You're being hard on yourself now. You're being hard. But look, and it is one of those cases where you can say, right, well, what's a fair assessment of this? And you say, look, these things happen. They do happen. But at the same time, you want to take it on the chin and you want to take a bit of tough love and say, listen, at the same time, I want to own this. And that's all it is, you know. And it is, it's like you said, Skell, it's a decision. Right, I'm not letting that happen again. I may be beaten another day, but at least I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can and lose falling on your shield, at least.
Hmm. Those permutations, by the way, before we go on to Waterford against Tipperary, I want to thank the Echo for putting all these little mini tables together, which made it easier and easier. So as Murph said, if Cork win, it's fairly simple. So Cork and Limerick wins, Limerick versus Cork in the final, they go back to the Gaelic grounds, Tipperary go through in third place. If Cork and Clare were to win, Limerick still finish top, Cork would be second and Tipperary would be third. If Cork win and it's a draw at the Gaelic grounds between Limerick and Clare, Limerick top, Cork second, Tipperary third. So very simple. It's only when Waterford win that the permutations change around, really. If Waterford and Limerick were to both win, you'd have Limerick against Tipperary, which would go to Semple Stadium for the final, and Waterford would qualify in third place. If Waterford and Clare both win, same scenario, Limerick finished top, Tipperary finished second, Waterford finished third. And if Waterford were to win and Limerick and Clare was to be a draw, Limerick against Tipperary in the final, Waterford go through in third place. So it is a proper winner takes all. Now, if they're draws, if Cork and Waterford were to draw and Limerick were to win, Limerick against Tipperary final, Cork would qualify on scoring difference ahead of Waterford. If Cork and Waterford were to draw and Clare were to win, Limerick versus Tipperary final, Cork go through. And if both games finish in a draw, Limerick against Tipperary final and Cork go through in third place. So Waterford have to win. It's win or bust for Waterford if they finish in the top three.
You're after unpacking a lot there, Will. Well, I have only one question now.
Go on.
What determines the venue for the final? Why were these predetermined?
So there was a rota and also home and away agreements here. So if it's Cork against Limerick, it's in the Gaelic grounds. We can now count Clare out because they can't qualify. If it's Limerick against Tipperary, it's in Semple Stadium. Waterford against Limerick, but Waterford are not going to finish in second place because particularly Limerick have got this massive points advantage over everyone as well. That would have been a porky queeve. And if it was to be Tipperary against Waterford, which again isn't one of the possible permutations at this stage, that would be in porky queeve as well. So I think they did the rota venues last year. And so that's the way they're sitting at the moment. And some of them had home and away agreements, which were already existing beforehand. So I think that's the case with Cork and Limerick. So we know it's definitely in the Gaelic grounds if they're the duo. And similarly, if it's Tipperary against Limerick, which is the other likely final, Semple Stadium.
Gotcha.
They're the venues. Again, you know, thank you to, I'm not sure who stuck that up, but somebody, could have been John Fogarty, I think, put up a little table with those after the Munster Council meeting a couple of months ago. I saved it on my phone and I knew it would come in handy at some point. And this moment is now.
Yeah.
So thanks to John for putting that together. And that's basically how it works out. So we know, again, it's fairly simple things. So ironically enough, Tipperary, who are most likely, based on those scenarios, going to finish either second or third, first team qualified because it was the first game on Sunday afternoon. Again, a lot of young lads are playing. Dar McCarthy back in, wasn't named to start but ended up starting. 11 frees out of 11 during the game. Oisin O'Donoghue, who had been really good in the 20s Munster final earlier in the week, gets the crucial goal to kill the game at the end. Nice little finish from him as well. It felt like Tipperary were the better team for the vast majority of this game, but couldn't quite shake Waterford off. I think the game was back level, 51, 52 minutes. Then Tip reeled off five or six scores in a row, and it just felt like they had the stronger finish in them. Really good spread of scores for Tipperary as well. You've got Jake Morris getting four from play. Jason Ford popped over those two wonderful sideline cuts, got a point from play as well. Again, Connolly hits over three long-range frees during the game. Stephen Bennett, who we talked about a few weeks ago, his landmark 100 appearance. Now he's the top scorer for Waterford in Championship history. He won't score an easier goal, probably the one he got a few seconds into the game. But 1-9 in the end has taken him ahead of Paul Flynn as Waterford's top scorer ever. Jamie Barron with 4 points. And then nobody else in the Waterford team got more than two, which I think was a big part of the problem during the game. I don't know, Murph. I mean, the 10-minute delay probably didn't help anyone, especially when the teams were out warming up, I think at 25-2, had to go back in, then come back out. It's a barren kind of shot for a point, I think, that ends up just going a bit short that gives Bennett the chance to score. They have 1-2, 1-3 in the board very early on, but didn't kind of press it home after getting that glorious start to the game.
No, it almost felt like a bit more of a, I'm not going to say a fortunate start, but it was a kind of a loop and kind of a ball that just went in. I think it was a Mikey Breen that was following Bennett at the time, just kind of got a little bit out of position, we'll say it, and it just landed nicely for Bennett. It's just one of those ones that kind of caught you on the hop. No, it was a great start for Waterford, absolutely. But I think it's just more of a reflection of, like, that happens early enough in the game. Tipperary just kind of slowly drift back into it, and now suddenly we're back in the game. Doesn't really matter what way the game started now, and now they just kick on. And again, Waterford have been good. You know, they put in really good performances, but again, just aren't there at the moment. When you consider the calibre that's in Munster, like, they just didn't have that quality to be really impressive against Tipperary. But, like, having said that, the Tipperary backs were really good. Like, they were really sharp. They were really tight in their men. They shut down Waterford a lot more. And they very much played like a team that knew that their fate was in their own hands. So they're like, look, we couldn't get this any better. We're down in Thurles. You know, this at least gives us an All-Ireland quarterfinal, you know, as in this is exactly where we want to be. So, it was really just a dominant performance, and particularly how Tipperary finished out the game. Like, they really sprinted through the line, as the lad would say. They were just very impressive. But, you know, Waterford gave themselves the platform. But I think we just saw in the performance after the first, let's say, 10, 15 minutes, that they're just lacking that bit of quality at the moment to, I suppose, go toe-to-toe with Tipperary, who have went through the ringer over the last few years, blooded those few players, and do have the players now to come in off the bench. Like, you know, they do have that little bit more depth. They're also, you know, they were going off the back of the 21s even during the week. Like, that's, or the under 20s during the week winning. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not to be underestimated either. Like, that was a really good win. It just all around Tipperary just had that bit more quality. And that's really what it came down to. Some of Waterford's shots then as well were just, again, they were just a little bit panicked, a little bit, like, it wasn't, I watched the Sunday game last night and I actually saw Joe Canning saying it, like, you know, one or two Jamie Barron's ones and stuff, where it was just, if you're 30, 35 yards out, 40 yards out, you have to be putting them over, like, you know, and a few of them wides were a little bit just a team that just weren't hitting their peak. You know, Bennett hit a 65 wide. It'll happen. However, against the Tipperary, who are really showing really good form, like, you can see where Waterford fell down. But look, Tipperary were impressive, and it really has, like, just the sense of the bandwagon being up and going now for Tipperary. The supporters are really excited as to what's to come. It is a very positive step for Tipperary, and it does banish the whole performance against Cork away. Like, I mean, people were kind of obviously saying, look, you can't read too much into that, and he couldn't. But it would have been a kind of a, if Tipperary didn't qualify in the end, Tipperary fans would be wondering what might have been, you know. But Tipperary, in fairness, they've really, the games they could control, they've really put in a solid effort, and they have good structure to their play as well. So, look, they'll be very happy. But Waterford, again, bar those 2 points on the first day, they're just struggling to try and get to that level where they can actually close out a win that would bring them up to the level of potentially qualifying. Like, I know they can qualify this weekend, but it's, like, again, when we get to Cork and Waterford, I'd be just looking going, where is that quality going to come from that the opposition team clearly has an abundance also on the bench? So that's where I just see Waterford falling short at the moment.
Yeah, Waterford have been pretty good defensively, though. That was the first goal they've conceded, the Usheen O'Donoghue one in championship so far this year. It's at the far end where they're having a problem reeling off the scores. Can we banish something as well, Skell, at this point, which was a claim made by many back at the tail end of the league and many times during the league, which was Liam Cahill goes in, he gets his team physically ready, they unload the tank within the league, you see this high work rate, and then they're not able to replicate that in championship, and the air goes out of the balloon as the year goes on. I saw a Tipperary team yesterday afternoon who were winning battles, getting to breaks, winning rucks, running hard, physicality, getting up in Waterford's face. That was not a team that looked like they were out of gas.
No, not at all. Again, it's evidential because, you know, I'm going back to a similar situation I said about Limerick with regards to forward unit. And, you know, people this year, like players, certain players this year have really stood up for Tipperary. And I don't want to use that phrase because it's so cliche, but it's the truth. Like, look at Jake Morrislet. You know what I mean? Like, I would have questioned him a couple of years ago heading into that Ireland quarterfinal when Tip played Galway and Limerick. I would have said, I wouldn't be concerned about him. I said, he'd be a small bit flip and flaky depending on the performance goes. But, like, look at him now. He's just involved in everything. So I have super time for the way he's put himself forward. And then you've got people like Andrew Ormond, you know, and Jason Ford and John McGrath, just keeping the scoreboard ticking whilst McGrath or McCarthy keeps his freeze going. Then add in Connolly. So it's like, this is a rejuvenated team. And it was very evident at the end of the game too, when the Sunday game panned towards Liam Cahill. He turns the crowd, you know, and really kind of celebrates and jeers them up. So it's like, there's a, how do I say it? It's like there's a connection re-established in Tipperary between supporters and team, if you know what I mean. It seemed like that was disconnected for the last couple of years because the performances didn't epitomise a Tipperary team of old. And there's a pride issue there as well, which you would say. When Tipper aren't going well, there's a pride issue between supporters and public. So that just seems to have gone. It seems like Tip have, at the start of the year, trying to establish a connection. And the only way you establish a connection with your supporters, I think, is through the work rate, the endeavour. It's the sheer effort and will. And when you have that, they'll start to get behind you. Mix it in with good performances in from your forwards. And like Murphy's right, it's a simple case of Tip forwards got 126, Waterford forwards got 119. That's just the gulf. That's just the difference in class. When you get to this level, you have to have multiple scores and multiple areas of you know, of danger, that if one man gets locked down, there's two or three guys that can stand up. You know, so from a Tipperary perspective, they're going to be delighted, especially with the input that their subs had too. I think the subs got maybe 1-3 off even though Usheen's goal was overcarrying, for sure. Definitely overcarrying. But to put that aside, like they just seem to be moving in a very, very nice direction. And, you know, players that we, you know, I suppose wouldn't put them in the top tier. What I mean by that now is Ronan Maher for me is top tier, Noel McGrath is top tier. You know, they're climbing into top tier. So like Owen Connolly is now establishing himself as one of the premier fullbacks in the country. The top tier. You know, Reece Shelley's spoke out yesterday, bar one or two, excellent. You know, so they put themselves into this top tier. Brian O'Mara, I have huge time for that lad. I think he's top tier. He's heading into top tier. So when you get players that are pushed into that kind of stratosphere, like Limerick have loads of lads top tier, but if you get players who are pushing into it, you know, performance levels become very, very high. So it's top class, in fairness. Like it'll be interesting. I do, as I said, on the outset, I do think it's going to be a situation where Cork and Limerick are contesting the Munster final, but if Tipperary got into it, they wouldn't let the side down for sure. So yeah, the train is back on the tracks here with this.
I was in Dante Nash earlier on as well. He was just talking about O'Mara and he was saying that sometimes he maybe got a bit of unfair flack over the last year and a half as he was finding his way into the team, and he thinks he's a terrific hurler. Says when he was coaching him, seeing him in training, like there's just so much hurling in him as well, that he can move the ball beautifully out of their back line. So he was delighted to see that he'd played well. Like Liam Cowell's comments, Murph, when it came to this, he said, "We're still far from the finished article, but we are going in the right direction." He said, "It's been difficult enough at times, but the key here are the players, the way they've gone about their business and fixing areas where we weren't where we needed to be 12 months ago. A lot of that transition is because of the changes we've made in the squad, newer players, etc. coming in, but a few experienced heads are still there to keep the culture that's required if we're going to play at this level. We're fortunate there's plenty of talent in Tipperary. Our 20s during the week retain the Munster title. It's a difficult job to make sure you're not pushing these lads too soon. But I said at the start of the National League, we have to be brave about how we go about this." Right through from players, management and coaches. And you know, Murph, that's one thing that Tipperary were criticised about probably in the post-2019 period. They weren't bringing enough lads in. And it felt like there was nearly a lost generation. And then there were these underage players who were playing under Cahill who maybe weren't getting the opportunity straight away. And then they had to wait a little bit longer. And now it seems that there's just a real freshness of blood that's come into this panel and is starting to pay off.
Yeah, Liam Cahill's assessment there, like you can find a more fair and balanced assessment of it. Like he's not overplaying the situation. He's just saying like, yeah, we're not the finished article. We've come a long way, which they have. And like that's when you're in the middle of it, it's not an enjoying place to be. It's not like how do I say it? You know, you kind of have this path to take to get back to where you want to be. You want it to be now, but you know that it's going to take a few matches. I mean, it's really taken 4 or 5 years for them to really, I suppose, find that balance of even lads leaving. You know, Shane McCallan and these lads, even Paddy Maher and so on, maybe wondering where those lads are going to come from. It's not about replicating those lads. It's about bringing in the newer lads, letting them play their own style and figuring out where they slot into the team, bringing back the likes of Willie Connors and so on. Like Alan Tynan has moved between half back to half forward and has seemed to kind of find his gist there. Like Jake Morris for a long time, and the likes of Jason Ford were really the two premier forwards for them, no pun intended, but they were really the two boys that, you know, on days where they were short to score, those two lads are pulling away. But now the supporting cast has really come true. Like Armand is flying it. He's in an absolutely fantastic form. And you see the likes of Oisín Donoghue there as well. Like he'd won 3 during the week with the 20s. And like, I'd never underestimate that for people who look like both of those panels really heavily feed off each other in terms of when one is winning. Like if the seniors are winning, the under 20s automatically are like, I'm in the shop window here now. I want to be performing well. And I want to be part of that group. And likewise, the seniors also feed off the under 20s. When they see we're Munster champions here now, young lads are coming through. Like you really want to set that impression for them as well. So they'll be delighted with those victories. And you can see that the players are coming through. Like Sam O'Farrell came on there as well during the week, didn't start the game. But like they're after finding those few key players who have been blooded, have performed really well during the league, carried in the championship, and go back to where we started about. Like I was one of those lads wondering, you know, about the whole Liam Cahill thing, because I'd heard it so much that people were saying, you know, they trained very early and very hard. I would have compared it when people said that I would have got that feeling of Dublin maybe 10 years ago, where they were always mighty during the league, but maybe just tailed sometimes into the championship then. So again, I think it was a fair thing to maybe see, like, was that true or wasn't it true? Because this year is the first year where we haven't seen a small bit of a drop-off in Tipperary in their performances and maybe looking leggy. They look really sharp at the moment. They look like they're really enjoying it and they just look in a good place. But to go back to Liam Cahill's statement, it's just such a fair and balanced view of where they are. Like, yes, they're not in pole position for Lee McCarthy. It's not that type of performance that we're talking about. But they can do a lot of things with where they are at the moment. Like they have a great platform for where they are and they can build on this. Everything they're doing at the moment, they can build. And as confidence even grows even more, their performances will get even better. So that's where the excitement is for the Tipperary for Tipperary supporters. And I think as well, something to say as well is that Tipperary will also look, and the Tipperary supporters will look at what Clare did last year. Like Clare weren't in pole position at any stage last year to go and win the All-Ireland, but they still did because game on game, they came with really good performances and did what they needed to do on each day. Would I say that Tipperary are capable of doing what they need to do on each day at the moment? Yep, I think they are. They're not as good as Limerick, but they're capable of, and it's probably touching on what you were saying, Skehill, like that if Tipperary were to turn up to a Munster final, they're going to perform. I would feel this team will just perform and let it be if it's not good enough. But they just seem to be in a position where they're getting the best out of what they have and they're looking to improve. So it's only good for the championship to have another you know, another haymaker of a team in the middle, they're causing problems. Like, you know, yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Why wouldn't they feel they can play well against Limerick? They gave them absolute socks of it in the first round of the championship this year. We'll do Waterford Cork in a lot more detail on the members pod scale, because that and Dublin against Galway are the games of the weekend, this coming weekend. But I know it's difficult to go to Páirc Uí and win, but if we cast our mind back, Waterford did beat Cork by a goal in the championship last year. I know it was in Welsh Park as opposed to going to Páirc Uí. Do you give them a chance of knocking Cork over this weekend and qualifying?
A chance, of course, yeah. But what level of chance now is the question.
You love your percentages, so.
I do, and it's 80-20 in favour of Cork, let's.
Okay.
Yeah. I stand by my statement when I said that when Cork play in Páirc Uí, regardless of opposition, they're 4 or 5 points in the head start. And when you've got a big, big kind of space arrangement in Cork with the pitch, it just suits Cork way more than just Waterford, simply because the potency of the Cork forwards is higher than the Waterford forwards. And that, I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean it from a respectful manner. That's just reality. So the Waterford backs are going to have an awful lot more to contend with, I'm afraid, with the movement, speed and power of the Cork forwards in that big pitch. So I can't see it. Stranger things have happened, of course, but I just can't see Waterford overturn Cork.
Right. Are you in a similar boat in the summer?
Yeah, similar boat. Like, I'm never a believer that one game changes everything for a team. Like, Cork is still just an outstanding caliber of player. I think Cork playing at 90% here will still be enough to beat Waterford. Now, Pat Ryan won't be saying that, but when I just look in each area of the field, can Cork? Yes, they can. As Gail said there, of course, anything can happen on the day. Absolutely. And I fully believe, like, Waterford have no reason not to go out this weekend and just throw everything at Cork. But Corker should be well forewarned at this stage. Like, they're looking to get their season back on track. And they're also looking for the game after that, ideally, to be Limerick and themselves. So there is no other option than to go out and put in a serious performance, get yourself back in face in Limerick, and then have another crack at Limerick. So that's that's my mind map at the moment as to where they're going. So, yeah, look, it's hard to see it at the moment. But we spoke about Tipperary a few minutes ago, that they had their little bit of a period to go through, a year or two. Maybe Waterford are just doing that at the moment. And that's a conversation for another day. So it's just, I just can't see it at the moment of Waterford turning Cork over.
Yeah. Look, again, I think the road has gone reasonably well into 1A for next season. Certainly hasn't been a bad Munster campaign so far, but it's a sticky situation to have to go and be Cork away from home to qualify. That's the game on RT 4 p.m. on Sunday. At the moment, and this could change, Limerick and Clare is not on TV. But this one is, it feels like such a dead rubber, and it's incredible to think that when it is Limerick against Clare, because Limerick have got such a good scoring difference. They're 24 points ahead of the other teams. So there's not that jeopardy of Limerick taking a defeat and getting pulled back into the pack. And similarly, Clare can't qualify. So it is an absolute dead rubber, really. So Cork Waterford is the RTE game. Leinster then, some of it's been decided already. So Kilkenny are into the final. Galway and Dublin are both going to qualify. And I've had a few people saying, oh, but Wexford can surely get through. They can't, because Dublin and Galway, someone's picking up a point at least, because they can't both lose. And no matter what other team finishes up on 6 points, it's head-to-head. They're head-to-head behind both Galway and Dublin. So Wexford can't qualify. They needed Kilkenny to be beaten by Dublin to have a chance. There was this kind of weird irony where Dublin could have left themselves open to be reeled in by Wexford, but yet they're not going to be. So they're still going to finish in the top three. Wexford did their part. The 2-17 to 1-17 win against Offaly at the weekend, where again, Lee Chin was a force of nature. Offaly led for pretty much an hour of that game before Wexford rallied late on to win it. Conor McDonald with a point, another famous podcaster at this stage, and Lee Chin to win them the game. Other games, well, yes. He's again, someone asked me about this, Murph, and this is, by the way, not having to go with Conor McDonald. Bubbles, by the way, is retired and can do whatever he wants. I had someone ask me, a Wexford supporter, who said, how would Brian Cody have taken it if any of the Kilkenny hurlers had decided to go and do a podcast while still a current player?
Walk us through, please, just walk us through it. Okay.
Yeah, what would the conversation have been like if you turned around and went, okay, Brian, Murph, I'm thinking of doing a podcast, and Bubbles.
There wouldn't have been a conversation. You would have said it to him, he would have turned and walked down the hallway, and a physio would have come out and dropped you. It wouldn't have even, I would say he'd even Mick Dempsey would go out. I'd say he would have got Racker Cody. You get out there now, and you're gone. Cody wouldn't respond to you. I wouldn't say, and you know what? I wouldn't bother me. It wouldn't bother me. He said one to a lad a few years ago. So I don't know if I told you this one before, where your man asked, could he play a football match with the club at one stage. Now, this is not to say Brian Cody let me go off and play football matches, a county final and so on. But a lad asked him, could he play a football match with the club one of the weekends? And he said, oh yeah, geez, no bother. I've no hassle with a fella pursuing a career in football if he wants to. I go off and play the football match if you want. That'll be it for you. But, no. I know, Jesse, like all those things you would have, not to say podcasting or anything, that was never a thing, but you never spoke to a paper without speaking to Brian. That was just simply it, like, you know. And it wasn't a case of that was fear or anything, it was very much looking after your own house. So no, that wouldn't have happened, absolutely not.
Yeah, look, again, I've listened to a couple of their pods so far, and it's not so much about what's happening right now, it's much more kind of general conversation around hurling.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I don't think Connor is giving away any insights into what's happening in the Wexford dressing room. So I'm sure he talked to Keith Rossiter beforehand, but I did think it was very unusual to have a current hurler. Look, again, maybe he's thinking about doing a bit of media afterwards, and this is a good way of kind of dipping the toe. You know, I'm sitting here with two former hurlers, I'm not going to criticise anyone for doing it, but a little bit strange, I must admit, having a current player doing it. But big game of the weekend in Leinster was Kilkenny Dublin. And this one is really weird. So Kilkenny win in the end, 5-19 to 3 goals and 21 points. Really should have had it completely set up with the way that they were going during the game. So, you know, Adrian Mullen gets a goal. Then they've got 4 in the net by the time that Mossy Keown has put his one in. And Billy Ryan has scored his first one. TJ scored a goal as well. Like, you're thinking that they're absolutely home and hosed. They're going in at halftime, 4-12 to 10 points up. Then Dublin rally in the second half. Sean Curry again has been doing some huge scoring for them. That goal seems to just inspire a 10 or 11 minute period where Dublin are going really well. They get 2-4 without reply, and then with Keane O'Sullivan banging in a goal as well, they find themselves back in a position where it's down to just a goal, 4-16 to 3 goals and 16 points. And it takes a very late and a very good finish from Billy Ryan from a tight enough angle with the goal to just seal it for Kilkenny in the end. But that kind of even around with that point, it had gone back to 4-18 and 3-18 when Ronan Hayes had a shot which was flicked over the bar by Murphy in the goal as well. I don't know. It's one of those things, Murph, I presume, like, you've seen the highlights of it now at this stage. I can understand why a few of our pod listeners are starting to wonder about Kilkenny drifting out of games where it seems like they have them won. Because that, again, seems it's a clear pattern now at this stage.
Yeah, well, like, Derek spoke about it after the game and he just said, like, it's not acceptable. Like, you know, going ahead like that and then kind of taking your foot off the gas. Again, it goes back to the Wexford match down in Wexford Park during the league. Savage performance in the first half, really good. Like, if both of these games on paper, you could nearly say, like, match it up. Like, you know, savage performance in the first half, go in at halftime, come out, foot off the gas, team comes back at you, you're forced to rally really hard when really you shouldn't have to be at this stage, and just come away with a victory. But it doesn't feel like that victory that you think it was, you know, it just because of the manner in which it happened. So look, Derek said it after game, it's not acceptable. It isn't, because you're luring yourself into this position whereby if you have yourself in a really good position in the Leinster final or whatever it might be, in All-Ireland semi-final, where it's a case that you've had a really good start, you're coming down the home straight, then you're up maybe 4, 5, 6 points against whatever team, and then suddenly that creeps back in, you take your foot off the gas. It completely comes back to a mental thing, and we could probably touch on it with what we're saying about Cork as well. Like, it's a decision-making thing. Like, you actively almost nearly make a decision when you go into the dressing room, you come out that this game is won. Now, like, they're up by 14 points, but that kind of nearly makes it more remarkable that, you know, it was reeled back in. So, look, it was exciting. That was one thing I think a lot of people were saying. They weren't expecting this much excitement and that much goals. But from a Kilkenny point of view, from a game management point of view, they won't be happy. And the thing is, like, the match this weekend against Wexford, it is a dead rubber. But I can guarantee Derek is saying to him, lads, well, this is an opportunity now to go to Wexford Park. Like, Wexford love playing us. There's no doubt about it. Wexford are out. But this is going to be a moral victory for the Wexford fans to go and beat Kilkenny again in Wexford Park. He'd be saying, this is an opportunity, lads. Whoever wants to be starting come a Leinster final, like, you need to go out and perform in this game. And so it will be an opportunity where I think Derek will be saying, lads, this crack of, you know, you're showing how good you are at times, but then you're taking the foot off the gas. We need to get rid of it. So go out and perform for 70 minutes against Wexford, put in a really good performance and show that we're getting rid of that trait that we seem to be displaying at the moment. Because it is something, look, there's no way around it. You have to get rid of that. You can't. And none of them Kilkenny players are going to come out and say that what happened was acceptable. Yes, they got out of jail, but you could even see the final whistle. The lads just kind of shaking their head and going, right, yeah, we got out of dodge there. But you could see the frustration that, why did it come to that, you know? So look, they'll be disappointed, funnily enough, in ways. But again, it's not a doom and gloom. It's still a case that you've won all your games. You're going to a Leinster final, and there is time now. You have another game before a Leinster final where you can go and put in a really good performance and say, look, that's not who we are. We're still building, we're still growing, we're still learning. A lot of new lads have come in, but we're not reverting back to that bad trait where we let teams back into it. So, yeah, look, Derek, like I said, lads, they won't be happy, but at the end of the day, they still have 4 wins from 4, so they'll take the positives from it.
Flip side to that, Scale, is that Dublin can look at this as in, it felt like they were getting beaten out the gate at halftime. They rally, make this a game a couple of times in the second half, finish it strongly, which in a way, we talk about the way a defeat can feel. Like, they've gone there and given Kilkenny socks, and now they can go into that Galway game with plenty of confidence, know that they're already qualified for the top three, so at worst they're going into the All-Ireland series. And a chance now for them to win at Parnell Park and go to another Leinster final here.
Yeah, I think when Dublin look back at the performance, the last instance is a very simple question, like, is how much work do we have to do to fix, you know, the goal concession rate? And it's not an awful lot of work, to be honest. Like, if Kilkenny opened them up with, you know, orchestrated moves, that there's huge errors or huge goal from class between forwards and defence, you'd say one thing. But I was listening out the goals, and like, first goal, drop. Second goal, sideline error. Do you know what I mean? Inside the 10 yards. Third goal, two defenders rising, then a bad shot that went past Eddie Gibbons. Fourth goal, two lads up again in the full back line. Goal. So there's four goals there. You'll say, are they avoidable? Absolutely. Absolutely. With just a bit more structural and communicative performance, that you'd say that they can be avoided. And if you take them out, which is, because it's very easy to say, for me to say, take out the four goals. But if you can fix that type of technical issue in your defence, That's a great standing. So you can see the 5-19. Can you take four goals out of that going forward into your next day? And I think it's entirely possible that they can. You know, then I have to say, if you're looking for positives in the team, on 37 minutes, it was 4-14 to 10 points. 8 minutes later, they outscored Kilkenny 3-6-2 points. That's some stat. Do you know what I mean? They're only a goal down. So it just goes to show that, yes, that there was liable for some shaky errors, defensive errors, but when they had to go at it and try claw a lead back, they went at it. So there's great, like, positivity from a Dublin perspective. And even from my perspective as a Galway man, I'm saying, next week, I have no idea how that game is going to go. That's 50-50. Mm-hmm. That's 50-50. I don't think anyone can say here with any degree of seriousness that Galway are favourites. It's 50-50 as far as I'm concerned. And it's toss the coin. No idea how that's going to go. And I will point towards the Limerick and Cork game as an example that if you're not ready for the fight, Dublin are going to roll you over badly.
Mm.
And I'd say it here now. There's a particular area that I'm concerned about, that what Dublin might do to us, and that's positions 8 through 12. I keep saying it, that the win, if they turn over Galway in the middle, they could run through us, unless we're set up really well ourselves. Now, that's not to move away from Kilkenny Dublin, but I'm saying next week, I'm identifying that's the spot. That's the spot right there, that if we get beaten, that's where we're going to get beaten. So I know he looked very, Niall Kilcahan looked very despondent and, I suppose, upset with the game at the end of it, but he has to go home thinking, geez, there's really, there was the bones of a good performance there. There was the bones of a really good performance that you can build upon and go forward, knowing full well that they're guaranteed, as I said before, with their two more games. So can they fix the fundamental errors they had in the backs, and can they move forward better in the forwards? Like, of course they can. So like, head into Parnell Park where, as we said, it plays tight, suits them perfectly, where they're athletes.
Yeah, I hope those pitch issues that they had. So again, I think we found out afterwards it was basically wanton destruction, that somebody had thrown down something on the pitch that actually destroyed it. So it was vandalism as opposed to anything being done wrong by the pitch staff that created that kind of horrible T that was there, and the lines that were drawn up towards, I'm going to call the kind of Donnycarney church end of the ground as well. So hopefully that's cleared up, because that cost them home advantage in a couple of games a few weeks ago as well, where the pitch was unplayable. So hopefully that's all in order for this weekend. It's live on TV. That game is going to be on RT. We'll preview it in more detail on the members pod. It's also live. You want to listen to it on 98FM as well. Jonathan Higgins and Ryan O'Dwyer, former Tipperary and Dublin player, are going to be on commentary for that one. So it should be really good. And again, I find this one a really difficult one to call, because, you know, Dublin went and turned Galway over away from home last year. You've got, I suppose, the Micheál factor coming back to Dublin this time round, and you've got Dublin going really well at the moment. Yeah, so it's a tasty fixture at 2 o'clock. The other fixture, which is going to be televised in Leinster, is the one on GA Plus, which is the one that Antrim need to win against Offaly. And the reason that Antrim need to win is because of Offaly's scoring difference at the moment. Antrim again took a 28-point defeat against Galway. Like, I was watching this game, Skell, and I sent you a screenshot at one point. I said, this game is shit. which is basically what I had taken in about 15, 20 minutes into it. Galway wouldn't have been happy with their own performance. They were making kind of sloppy mistakes and their forwards were losing a lot of ball. But even Antrim, when they had the wind, were playing with a man withdrawn from the forward line. They were having to shoot from all sorts of bizarre angles. I never felt that Galway were going to be in any trouble because it didn't feel like Antrim were going to run up a score. I appreciate that Antrim are missing some of their frontline forwards due to injury. I don't know how many of them are going to be back for this coming Sunday. But it was just one of those weird games where even when it got to half time, I always felt that Galway were going to just kind of hit the hammer and win heavily.
Like, the game was shite, Will.
It was. It really was poor.
It's called a spade here. I'm not trying to be, overly colourful, but it was like, and it was just two goals in class. Like, it was a real goals in class. You know, it was worse than Limerick and Cork with regards to the degree in class. And it was like, oh, we had seemed to have a structured plan in terms of how to get the inside line on the ball. How to work it out from the back. They had Galway had a good puck out structure, I thought, in fairness. And they snuffed out most of Antrim's attack. Antrim had nothing. You know, they had nothing. They had no fight, no tactical plan. They didn't look sharp whatsoever. Energy levels were quite low. They were bad in the tackle. When all those things go against you, then there's a bit of a frustration factor that comes with it. And that's what happened. Like, it's just no steam. And it was a really poor affair. I don't think I can say any more than that. Fair, to be honest, I can say no more than that. Grant, we got some minutes into fellas. Hopefully we came out unscathed with regards to injury. I would like to have seen Doughty Burke back. I thought he was back for selection. I thought he only got one game ban. I'm open to correction.
Yeah, I think it was only one game, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought he would have played and get some minutes back. Finton went off injured, you could say. But I hope that's not a bad injury. So, again, because we need everyone next week. And if Doughty's available, he needs to go on Big Heather, as they call him in Dublin. Heather needs to take care of him on the high ball with his Peter Duggan way of catching the ball. So, look, it was go in, get the 2 points. Build up a score line and say for your points, just for instance, get out of town. That's it. Simple as that.
The big talking point out of this was Davey. So I think we have to talk about Davey's comments with Siobhan Madigan on RT Radio after the game. So he says that they're going to go to Croke Park about Declan McCluskey's red card. And even the commentary team at the time weren't exactly sure what he was sent off for. It was Dave McIntyre and Noel Connors who were on the commentary in GAA. And the feeling was that it was like Tom Monaghan had initially hit McCluskey, the two of them hit the ground. They weren't quite sure whether it was his knees coming down, but it was Johnny Murphy who came in as the linesman and who basically gave the detail to the referee, which resulted in the red card. So then afterwards, Dave Fitzgerald was saying that he was thinking of going to Croke Park. He said, quote, "The way one of our players is treated by the officials is something they were going to go to Croke Park and talk about. We're not happy with that." And then he was pressed about, you know, what he felt disappointed about. And Fitzgerald said he's despised by a section of match officials within the GAA. He said, quote, "It was Johnny Murphy that seen it, and Johnny Murphy now wouldn't have any time for me anyway. That's out there. Everyone knows that himself and one or two more of them, they actually despise me. That's fine. I can get over that. But don't take it out in the players. You have to see everything. Would it made a difference? It wouldn't have made a difference. Galway were way better than us in the day. There's no getting away from that. I'm disappointed with how we played in the second half. We didn't fight the way we should have fought. It was too easy for Galway out there." Now, Murph, I think if this is a Premier League official who said that about a referee, to say that a referee is out in a biased way to get at my team because he dislikes me, that manager would be getting a ban, wouldn't he?
I would, yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, it's disgraceful, to be honest, to be saying something like that. Like, the referees have no platform to defend themselves. They don't expect to be for things to be said about them like this. But to go out and basically say that Johnny Murphy and a cohort of referees are following Davey around the country, wherever he's managing, and that they're out to do him. Like, Antrim were beaten by 28 points. They've been beaten by 16 points. They've been beaten by 15 points. They've been beaten out the gap. And for me, this is creating an issue where there's not an issue in order to deflect from what's happening. I think there's a bit of reputation. Like, he's trying to protect his own reputation by saying this somehow, but he needs to take a look at himself. You can't say that about amateurs. Like, we're all amateurs here, players, officials, whatever. There's no officials out there with an agenda following lads around. Like, I just think it's terrible to say that. And, like, to say that it's out there that Johnny Murphy doesn't like me, it's not out there. Like, I mean, this is the first time I've heard something like that said. There's so many parts to pull apart here. Like, we had no plans to go and start discussing something like this before the weekend. But to come out and say that there's an agenda against him and that, you know, that referees despise him. Like, again, I go back to the point. I'll say this. I do not believe that any of that is true. None of that is true. But the other side is last year, why was Liam Gordon escorted off the field above an Ennis? Because Davy Fitz went out after him on the field. I don't believe Liam Gordon has any bias towards Davy, but at the end of the day, Davy was a lad who went out and let himself down with the way he carried on. Who was booked by James Owens? Was it last year or the previous year? After being on the Late Late Show the night before, saying that anybody who abuses a referee should be suspended. Davy was booked the following day for doing it. Who has been sent off more than any other referee for the way they conduct themselves towards referee? Davy. Like, and even with that said, I do not believe any referee has a bias towards Davy. But you can't come out and say that. And like, I just think it has to be said for the referees that like, they go through enough as it is. And I think we've seen some really good officiating this year. There's certainly been decisions that that referees have gotten wrong, but I can think of so many games that they've done really well. And to come out and say that a group of referees, and name Johnny Murphy in particular, and say that they despise me, like, I can't. That's terrible to be saying that. And like, realistically, Davey's saying he's going to go to Croke Park about it. I think he should apologise for that, because if Davey actually came out and said, listen, I was a bit upset and I lost the room myself, I'd actually kind of go, okay, you've earned a bit more credit in that you've acknowledged that this was not right to say. But if he doesn't come out and at least say, look, you know, I let the run of myself go there, I got a bit hot-headed, whatever, like, this remains a disgraceful thing to say about referees. And like, I think if we don't acknowledge it, we're leaving a door open where I don't think other managers would do this, but that you could slander referees like this in public and not have a repercussion. It's terrible.
I think, by the way, it's perfectly okay, the first half of the sentiment, which is two lads have tangled. Surely that should be two red cards, or I feel aggrieved that my player was sent off when it felt like it was a tangling of two players.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine. And if you want to turn around and say, we're going to take this for an appeal and we feel that we have a very strong argument about that and I need to make sure my player is not suspended, we've got a big relegation match next week, that's fine. But it's when it's personalised into the idea that a referee has an agenda against you, Skell, that's the problem.
It is, but the incident he spoke about, like, is a standard discussion around an incident that happens in a game. I think most managers and coaches in every sport, you know, would be open to discussing such an incident if they're on the receiving end of it. And that's absolutely fine, as long as you keep it between the lines. You know what I mean by between the lines. You keep it fair. And as most managers will deflect. Most managers, when they're being, you know, interviewed live, they will say, I haven't looked at the incident, I'll have to catch up, and then do their work behind the scenes. So if you just want to go to Croke Park, go to Croke Park, but go quietly. Just go quietly. Go about your business quietly. Don't draw any unnecessary attention onto you or the player who's been sent off. You know what I mean? I don't think the player, I can't remember his name now, mind you, Will, who got sent off would appreciate being brought into the crosshairs, that kind of discussion. You know? And like, for me, here I go again, off the ball, talking about Davy Fitz, but it's like, I just can't understand it, how people can't see this like that. That he's been in, I mercifully noted a few instances, like some of which I forgot about, the one where he got booked the day after. I just can't get over the one with Jason Ford a few years back. I think it was in Northern Park in a league game where he came on and physically started fighting Jason Ford. Like, that's absolutely reprehensible. There's no sport does that happen. And like, yet it's tolerated. And I do believe, honest to God, the only reason it's tolerated and it's not in national media is because of his affiliation with RTE and the Fitz family. You know, that's why it's very quiet. If any other manager went about the business the way he does, it'd be all over national media, papers, news, and they'd be calling for lifetime bans, right? I just think he's full of shite, completely full of shite. He does one thing, says another. So that's why I get kind of hot when I speak about this, because the whole ethos of the GAA and the whole ethos of intercounty management is not epitomised by him. That is a fact. And you can debate me and you can say all you want about, you know, you don't like him. I don't like him from, you can call it personal. It's not personal. It's strictly me looking at his management roles in all the counties. And then straight away he says, oh, I'm burnt out, I have to go. You know what I mean? And then a month later, I know personally that his representatives are ringing counties. I know personally his representatives rang Galway, they rang Westmeath, they rang Offaly when he was out of work, and then got him to Antrim. If I was the Antrim chairman or part of their board, I'd be saying, at the end of this year, whatever may happen, thank you, Davy, we no longer need your services, and get away from that fucking circus. You know, they went from a man in Darren Gleeson who brought great, for me, anyway, from my perspective, brought great pride back into Antrim, brought a bit of positivity, you could say, I think it's fair to say, and rejuvenated the whole squad, rejuvenated the whole place. And, you know, made Corrigan Park a bit of a, somewhat of a semi-fortress. So he made great strides. And then all that was just, has been undone over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. So if I'm the chairman, I'm saying, peace out, you're out. Simple as that. And move on.
I think if Davy was here when it comes to kind of national media protection and so on, he'd probably be the first one to point out this, like, you guys have got a national reach on a podcast and you guys have had no problem calling me out for the last 4 years. And
there's levels, Will. There's levels, though. There's levels.
Yeah.
So our reach, okay, let's be honest with this, right? Our reach is I won't say
it's less than the Sunday game.
It's a level. It's got a level, right? Hmm. But then go up to the next level. Go to the Sunday game or go to RTE or go to whatever you want to call it. Those big platforms. Not a bit of said. Not a bit. Yeah. Can you imagine the column inches or the RTE news if John Kiley went on and started wrestling with Darragh Fitzgibbon yesterday? Can you imagine what would happen? You know what I mean? Or he was caught on camera abusing a player over the microphone, you know, or acting the way he does when referees have to get his scars off the pitches. Jeez, there'd be hell to pay. And if it was repetitive.
Doing a Peter Keane on it.
Yeah.
You saw those quotes, right?
Yeah. Just quotes, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, yeah.
The strangest part was that the journalist actually reported it when there was actually no need to report it, because this happened when the microphones had been turned off. So just for anyone who may have missed this, Peter Keane is the Clare football manager at the moment. He's been there for the last year. They're in the All-Ireland Series. I think part of Clare qualifying for the All-Ireland Series has been due to their provincial draw, which helped because you've got Cork and Kerry on one side. So Clare got to a provincial final and therefore went through. They played in Division 3 this season. So expectations, I think, would be that they're in a bit of a rebuild at the moment. It's going to be difficult. They took a heavy defeat against Down. I don't think people would have expected them to beat Down. And then afterwards, one of the local Clare media basically said, "Are the team going backwards under you, Peter?" And then he just basically shut the interview down at that point. I can understand why he would have been annoyed about it. To me, that's an unnecessary, provocative question after the end of a round one All-Ireland Series game. And then Peter Keane came back when the microphones were turned off and said, I think you're a C unit. Which I would imagine wasn't expected. But the journalist in question printed it. And so you've probably seen the quotes. That definitely got some column inches that probably wouldn't be expected. But yeah, I don't know. I think, by the way, John Kiley would get a lot more column inches because people wouldn't be expecting that if he came out and wrestled with a player on the pitch.
Is that acceptable?
No, absolutely not. No, it's not.
A person's persona or their image.
No, but I just think, like, if that was a John Kiley or a Derek Ling or somebody who you would not be expecting it from whatsoever, it becomes an absolutely crazy story as a result.
Yeah.
Like, you'd never see Jim Gavin running out and shouting at a referee.
Oh, he's the opposite of that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just not his persona, like.
Like, we see, the thing is, I have to state as well, we've all shouted referees. I have. In games, I've all shouted them, like I say. But you keep it in the debate line. Do you know what I mean? You don't let it cross the personal line.
Yeah.
And everyone knows what I mean when I talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, you keep it in the debate line because you're trying to get a decision either overturned, in your favour, whatever it may be. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're trying your best to kind of, I would say, semi-influence their decision-making. And 99.9 times of 100, it never works. Never works. So it's like... But we still do it anyways. But we always keep in the debate line. And rest will tell you that too. If you keep in the debate line, that's fair and equal. They can take that and they can give it back too. When you start getting personal and calling names out in your national media circles, you're crossing a big line. And Murphy, you're right. Apology should be issued.
Yeah.
And if not by him, right, it should be on behalf of Antrim, in my perspective.
Yeah. With Antrim as well, like, I mean, there's a lot of we's said there. Like, and I just wonder, for Antrim's sake, are they sitting back now going, "We didn't say anything"? Like, you know, it's not we, like, you know. And maybe they do support it, and that's the thing. I'll always hold my hands up and say when I don't know. But there was a lot of we's there saying we were going to Croke Park. Do Antrim really want to go to Croke Park over this and shake that tree? Because part of this also goes to Antrim in that, let's say if Davey moves on, you know, this was said in Antrim's tenure. So Antrim are also looking at it going, this is maybe doesn't reflect our views, and maybe do we have to say something? So it's a one that doesn't take consideration of Antrim into it. Like, it was very much said afterwards, the blood was up, very upset, but you have a responsibility to think about the team you're representing and say, like, does this share the views of the team I'm in charge of? Because if Antrim are standing there going, "Hang on for a second, we don't feel that, but now we're going to Croke Park." Like, that's, I just think there's no consideration for Antrim hurling there as well, which is just... It's another layer to it that I just think is very unfair. And it's just, I think the whole thing is so unfair on referees, on Antrim players and on Antrim hurling. I just think it's just so unfair on them.
Yeah, I think it depends what the complaint to Croke Park is. If it's that Declan McCluskey has got caught up in a situation where both players should have been booked, or he was retaliating, or it's not clear that's a strike and we video evidence of that, that's different. That's an appeal. If it's a case of they're going to Croke Park to complain about a perceived bias of officials against them, and Johnny Murphy's not refereeing in any way for the Offaly Antrim game this weekend, by the way, but if there is that feeling that that's what he's going to Croke Park for, I think that's a very different conversation with the GAA. So
I don't think that'll happen, though. I don't think that'll happen, because there's no grounds for that.
Yeah, like, I mean, they shut it down at source. The shutting down source.
That won't happen. Now, maybe it'll go to be a case of a review of the red card and look for a bit of justification there, or maybe whoever it was, Tommy Monaghan or whoever, are they going to throw him under the bus? But a case of bias against referees, like, that's a serious claim. That's not revoking a red card. That's a, like, an accusation against the system. Like, that's way bigger.
That's defamation.
Absolutely.
How do you prove it? It's impossible.
Yeah, that's what we're getting into. It's the territory we're getting into, and it's murky water. You can't be doing these things, you know.
Crux of it is, 2 years ago, Antrim had barely any form, and Westmeath just got a result against Wexford. Antrim beat them and relegated Westmeath. So even the way that Antrim have been going so far, you can't rule them out at all ahead of that game. GGA plus on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So yeah, again, we're kind of talking about the fact that, you know, Offaly lost in a way that's probably more acceptable. Against Wexford the weekend, where they went out in their shield by comparison to Antrim taking a bit of a kicking. But will it be a case now of, you know, Antrim will be all G'd up for this one game which they have to win? I've definitely been of the feeling as an Offaly supporter that Offaly needed to box clever and needed to be in the best position possible for the Antrim game. I know their manager Johnny Kelly said after the game at the weekend that he kind of thinks that's bullshit and that they have to go and try and win every game, and every game is important. I think we'll see when the final game finishes out. Sometimes you can have a team who pick up injuries, who are pick up fatigue, but the way that he saw it was a good performance against Wexford was more important than, say, rotating players out. So, I don't know. He feels they're going to be ready with the 7-day turnaround for this weekend. So, that game will determine who goes into the Joe McDonagh Cup. Antrim need to win to stay up. A draw would keep Offaly in the Leinster Championship for another season, but it's winner takes all in Tullamore on Sunday afternoon. I said I just want to touch on the Joe McDonagh Cup before we finish up as well, because I was keeping a close eye on this because I was working on the radio on the Laois and Kildare game yesterday, and bloody hell, what a win for Kildare. I know you were chatting about Dowling a few weeks ago, Murph, and the way that he's been going there and he's building this incredibly impressive CV, but what Kildare did yesterday, much better physicality, much better pace, hurled Laois off the field basically throughout the game, won by 11 points. David Coulter was very good with the freeze, even against the wind. He got 1-6 in the end. Jack Sheridan banged in goals in either half. Colin McCabe got them a goal to just give them a little bit of leeway before half time. He finished up with 1-2. But generally across the team, they had 12 different scorers. The only scorer that got more than two scores for Laois was Mossy Keys, their free taker, who got 7 points, five frees in all. It's a landmark win for Kildare, mentioned at the top. Hadn't beaten Laois since they beat them in the third flight of the league back in 1978. Had never beaten them in championship. So it's been a long time since Kildare have enjoyed a win like this against their neighbours. They are in a really strong position to qualify, because of the table here in front of me, because of the fact that Kildare have been on this run over the last few weeks. So while the table might show them in third place at the moment because of the scoring difference, Kildare are in a really good position because they've beaten Carlow and they've beaten Laois. So Laois and Carlow play each other. So at max, one of those teams can go to 8 points. So if Kildare do the business themselves and win against Down, who are fighting against relegation, Kildare are going to be going to their first ever Joe McDonagh Cup final. Themselves and Down are both in Division 1B for next season in the league. Down beat Kildare in that final, with both teams qualifying for the second flight next year. Down gave themselves, a massive lifeline at the bottom of the table by beating Kerry on Saturday afternoon. 2 goals and 26 points to 2 goals and 19. So Down sitting on 2 points. They have head-to-head over Kerry, which has forced Kerry into a position where, to keep things in their own hands, they need to beat Westmeath. Westmeath are also on 2 points on the back of their defeat against Carlow. Westmeath 4-22, Carlow 7-23, probably the highest scoring game of the weekend. Marty Kavanagh with 3 goals and 11 points for Carlow during that one, but a complete score fest in Mullingar where Carlow came out on top. So Carlow putting the Kildare defeat behind them. Kildare, though, coming in with this crazy sail where they lost their first game against Kerry and then went and beat Westmeath, Laois and Carlow to put themselves into this position. So it's all down to the final weekend. Boat relegation, one team goes down and two teams go to the final. And Laois and Carlow is effectively a semi-final. Winner takes all at Netwatch Cullen Park on Saturday as well. So that is the Joe McDonagh Cup. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure being back with you for the last 90 minutes or so.
Thanks very much, Will. Fair play to you. Good to see you.
Great stuff, Will. Yeah.
We'll see you again for the Members Pod, which we're going to record.
You've brought the very, pod very back soon. On course.
I think it was on fine course last week. I did have one email, by the way, which says, I'm not listening to the podcast until you come back. And I'm not sure that was necessarily a compliment saying, I really enjoy you on the podcast. It was
that Skehill?
It could have been. No, it was a Waterford fan who said that you were being unfair on Waterford and I needed to come back to restore order on everything
right.
Waterford best.
Okay.
We're being unfair on Waterford.
Yeah, apparently so.
No. Oh, don't pull the thread. Don't pull the thread, Skell.
I'm not saying it. No,
don't go any further. But I also thought that was funny where someone said, oh, Skell's going to be bullying because Tipperary have beaten Waterford. And I was there going, you do realise for the last 3 or 4 weeks people are saying he hates Waterford as well. Like, surely that game was win-win for him.
No, they can't win. It's people in Galway saying I hate Galway. I can't win.
Well, I this is a man who said he loves his county, so I fully believe him on that one.
I do, 100%.
Murph, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks very much, lads.
All right, we'll be back next Sunday after the last round of games in both Munster and Leinster. We'll have the end of the Joe McDonagh as well. So looking forward to that. See you then.